I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's the butterfly effect for real.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. We're ripping through the all 32, covering every single NFL team inexplicably in this offseason. It was a great idea by Debo, our producer, to make sure we hit every NFL team, but it's been fun because we get to bring on enjoyable guests, including today, Mark Sessler of NFL Media, great friend of the show, multi-time guest, I believe. So you're a Browns fan, a lifelong Browns fan, and I don't think we talked Browns last year. I can't remember. I know we had Mary Kay Cabot. We had Mary Kay Cabot before the season. Maybe we talked at some point, but like, I distinctly remember her saying, and this was sort of what flipped me on the 2019 Browns, because I wanted to be all in on it. Plus everybody was hyping the Browns. She was like, yeah, they're sort of redoing the offense. They're not going to go with what worked in 2018. It was like, wait, what? Why? She was like, yeah, they're building out this hybrid offense throughout training camp and going to unleash it, with Baker Mayfield learning it as he goes and Freddie Kitchens being the architect. I was like, oh, I'm out of the Browns. Like, this is going to go poorly. And sure enough, it did. Do you believe that 2020 with a new GM and a new head coach and presumably a new style offense, like, are you worried that there is some hype building now, where are you at with the hype train as it surrounds the Browns?
You know, I think maybe it's just what has been occurring here at home and outside of the home and in the larger world at hand. I don't spend an enormous amount of time thinking about the Browns the same way I would have probably when I fell into psychological traps back in like 2010 when I named my second child after Colt McCoy. Things like that, where I would wish cast certain scenarios that would not come to be with this team. And I think that's a pretty incredible, nugget that Mary Kay dropped back at that time, because it was a hype tornado she was operating in back then.
It was insane.
Right? I mean,
they were a top 5 to 10 team in terms of Super Bowl odds, the Cleveland Browns.
That worried me a lot more than I feel a sense of calm with this team. Not that I think there's a shoe-in playoff spot. You look at the offense, they should be a playoff team. I would say this. They seem highly organized compared to where they were a year ago. When you had Freddie Kitchens in there, and I think that you and I are someone that we would, you know, Freddie Kitchens the person, and, you know, we've mentioned this on our own show, love to go on a bar crawl with him and just hang out, right?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Like, he seems like I bought hook, line, and sinker on Freddie Kitchens. I didn't go so far as, like, my colleague Sean Wagner McGuff picked him to be coach of the year. Whoops. I think a lot of people probably did. But he's just, like, charming, affable, southern, like, literally bigger than, like, life, just, you know, right. Blue collar. I bought hook, line, and sinker on Jimmy Haslam when he bought the Browns. He's like, I'm fired up to, like, I'm a sucker for, like southern guys who infiltrate high ranking positions, because it's like, yeah, like, let's get a woo.
Yeah,
and as it turns out, wildly unorganized and a total disaster.
Yeah, I don't know where you wind up watching games on Sunday, but after hearing, and I kind of felt like it was a bit of a bait and switch. Like, I had all my coworkers saying, like, Browns playoffs, like, and I was like, wait, there's more nuance to this. Just because the history of the team, you're in a division where you're not ticketed to win that division. Right. You know, this is a thorny AFC North always, with teams that, know how to get through ups and downs. The Browns had zero history of that. And, that week one, sitting there at my desk, surrounded by, you know, a bunch of Whitcrackers, tracking the Browns more than any other team. And they're shelled by the Titans.
And in like 10 minutes too. Like it was like so a close game, and all of a sudden it's just, you just don't know what's happening.
Exactly. Cleveland, if I recall, they ripped down the field for an opening touchdown. And I thought this might be something very special. And they never had that drive ever again all year. And the one B-line,
they missed the extra point too.
Right? Exactly. So there was already some sort of dark magic happening here. But the B-line coming out of last year, when you got players to talk at the Pro Bowl and things like that, where they were able to say encoded phrases for the most part, the team, like the worst type of NFL team, didn't have a game plan after the first drive or two.
Right.
And you just saw that that level of chaos. And, you know, initially everyone just wanted to blame the offensive line. The offensive line was a pretty good run-blocking line. They had issues, obviously, at both tackle spots, which they've addressed. But I think it was a terrible situation for Baker Mayfield to be in. From the quarterback coach up, I just think it was too much turnover and a lack of direction. And the one thing about Kevin Stefanski, and he wasn't the first person I thought they should go hire, but I do trust the fact that, you know, the analytics wing of their building 2 years in a row wanted Stefanski, and he's come in, and I do think this new staff and Alex Van Pelt working with Baker have put in very defined goals for every player. Everyone sort of said that. So I like the sound of that better than what Mary Kay had to offer a year ago.
Yeah, and I think the thing with Stefanski, and you mentioned the analytics, like that's – so I would say too, the only place he's ever worked is the Minnesota Vikings. Like there's right. some pleasant stability to that he has – I'm not sure why he was there for that long. He worked for Brad Childress, Leslie Frazier, and Mike Zimmer. Like – he's a good enough coach where he wasn't fired by any of those guys, and he worked his way up from age 24 as an assistant all the way through to becoming the quarterback's coach and eventually the offensive coordinator. And I thought the Vikings were good on offense last year, but you could always see this, like the thumbprint of Mike Zimmer, who was just refusing to allow Stefanski to sort of uncork maybe a little more passing game. But like, you know, Kirk Cousins, wildly efficient and accurate on play action. To me, the similarities are there for this to work for Cleveland because you have the weapons in the passing game and you have really a better offensive line than, you know, they added Jedrick Wills in the draft and then signed Jack Conklin, to go with Joel Batonio and JC Treader. I mean, like they have pieces there and that was a big weakness last year. Like the offensive line wasn't good.
It was a huge problem. I think it got into Baker Mayfield's head too.
Yeah.
You know, it's this, we haven't experienced this as adults, but I can only imagine that you still feel the pain of like a 320 pound behemoth landing on top of your body, you know, six times in the first game of the season. The offense kind of has the ability, I think, to mimic what the Vikings did because you've got two great running backs. You have your line fixed, as we mentioned. I think it's a tight end centric offense. You've got Austin Hooper. David Njoku, I like that they didn't just move him away. I think that he was hurt last year. He never had a chance to really become what he wanted to become. He is, and I wonder if he's one of these guys like the classic athletic freak who doesn't really turn into a producer. I think it's a huge year for him because they drafted Harrison Bryant, who the more I hear about him at tight end, seems like he could be a true steal in the fourth round. And so I think Njoku has a big task ahead of him to stay on the roster after this season. But if you look at how the Vikings operated, Stefanski, it kind of reminds me a little bit, and I'm not making a comparison to what will happen with the teams, but when John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan paired up in San Francisco, they went crazy in that offseason to build the elements that a Kyle Shanahan offense needed to succeed. Not, hey, let's get there in year three. And it wasn't all the perfect pieces, but you kind of saw, hey, here's what he had in Atlanta, and he has similar pieces to run a similar offense here in San Francisco. They've done that for Stefanski, and I think Andrew Berry has been the kind of the quiet hero of this offseason, youngest GM in the league. And whether it was free agency, are they going to get fleeced and look like clowns? Are they going to be overwhelmed in a short period of time with the draft? Every one of their draft, you know, selections, and I'm not a draft guy, so you're more like looking at the people you trust and talking to some people. They said value picks in every round, and they kind of got guys who kind of begin to fit an identity for Cleveland. Not a bunch of like, let's go sign this guy to try to get over the hump, but people that are pretty football obsessed, which I think matters in 2020 when there's so much distraction for someone of that age. So I don't know. To me, the overall makeup is honestly more hopeful than a year ago. And I'm kind of glad that they're zooming under the radar a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think I like this comp that you're making to the Vikings offense. Like, I think it's perfectly fair. I mean, let's say that the line is slightly like, let's just call the offensive line a wash just for the sake of not, you know, since you and I are not, you know, like pure offensive line analysts.
No, we're
like,
not.
If Jeff Schwartz is on here, maybe we add, even then, like, I don't think anybody can know because Conklin's moving to a new scheme. But you know, they were run heavy in Tennessee and they expect him to be run heavy here. Like, you can picture a scenario where they're, maybe one wide receiver sets a lot of times, like even where I mean, like where it's, you rotate Jarvis Landry or Odell Beckham, or I mean, I don't know that they're going to spread the ball out a bunch. I mean, because after Jarvis and Odell, it's Rashad Higgins and Kadarius Hodge, Damian Ratley, Tywan Taylor, and then like Donovan Peoples-Jones, who's a rookie. Like, they're not deep at wide receiver, but they are deep at tight end, and they, like you said, they have two great running backs. So why not? And I made this point about Bill Belichick and the Patriots. Like, why not keep it simple? You know, you want your quarterback to succeed, pound the ball with these guys behind this offensive line you paid for, run play action, and then hit your tight ends and get two and three tight end sets out there.
I love the idea of that. I honestly think Nick Chubb is, because there's so many phenomenal running backs right now, I think he gets a little bit left out of the mix.
Yeah.
Because there's other personalities in Cleveland. When I watched Nick Chubb, you know, I started watching the Browns back when Kevin Mack and Ernest Biner were there in the 80s. He is the best Browns running back I've ever watched by leaps and bounds. And
wow.
And Ernest Biner, he was my favorite player growing up. I just think you can do so much with Kareem Hunt too. That is a built-in pass catching weapon. So I'm with you on that. I think the play action approach for Baker Mayfield, and they've been working on his footwork. I don't know if the coaches last year even would have drilled down to that type of detail, or I do know they wouldn't have. They didn't. And so this coaching staff wanted to get in and fix things that were a problem last year. There is no reason that Baker Mayfield in this offense has to go out and do it all on his own. And there, I keep hearing over and over, and it makes sense. Like, it is this make or break season where if Baker Mayfield isn't, you know, like a young Joe Montana, that he's out the door. Well, you know, there, it is also a team still building and in process. And we live in an age where a third-year quarterback better be fully developed in Patrick Mahomes-ish, or we have issues, right? I just think that if you look at someone like Rashard Higgins, like, he and Baker Mayfield developed a ton of chemistry. And then last year, they weirdly, him and a couple other Browns players were just weirdly benched and seemed to have issues with the coaching staff. Like, let's just wipe away the layer of unnecessary drama and put our best players out there. And that alone should get them two or three more wins. That alone, because the drama and what happened, I mean, it was embarrassing to see Kitchens and players exploding at each other on the sideline. I think they just, these guys like Odell Beckham, who's always catching heat from people, cared very much about what happened last year and his performance. And they were distressed by, I think, the lack of plugged in organization from the coaching staff.
And I actually thought, like, Baker, I think if you asked a random person on the street, like, what did Baker Mayfield, I mean, what did Odell Beckham, excuse me, do in 2019? They'd be like, I mean, he had like 730 yards and he threw a helmet at Freddie Kitchens. It's like, well, actually, like, you know, he had over 1,000 receiving yards and he was kind of well behaved for the most part.
I mean, like, fine.
Yeah. And so I think that sort of gets lost in the conversation. It's like, this is not a guy who went out and was a problem out there. Like, he had 1,035 yards. That's not great for him, but he wasn't on the same page with Baker. And to your point about quarterbacks, Mark, like, it's, remember, I mean, Jared Goff is a great example. We went from Jared, it's like, this guy is a complete and total bust 8 games into his career with Jeff Fisher. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, Jared Goff is an MVP candidate. Now it's like, Goff is a bust again. He's the worst contract in football. It's like, okay, maybe we should breathe. Like, the Browns are going to pick up Baker's 5th-year option no matter what happens this year. I feel like. And that gives them, even if he has an okay year and takes a small step forward, that's another 2 seasons to mature into what he wants to become. The idea, we are just, I mean, we're just way too quick to judge these guys. And that's, part, it's just how it happens, I guess, nowadays, but it is, and we're guilty of it, but it's just tough. I mean,
I'm personally not guilty of it, but it's part of the machine where, you know, it's June and we're talking, and it's February, it's March, it's May. It's like the football, you know, reporters used to go away for a little bit and cover something else. And that's just not the case. And I'm glad it's not the case. With Baker Mayfield, it's like, there's sort of some tropey stuff happening where he's talking about, you know, I'm operating in the shadows. We've poked a little fun of that on our show. But at some point, people are like, we want him to mature and change. It's like, I still think that the Cleveland Browns and the AFC North, I don't mind my quarterback with a little bit of fire and a little bit of attitude. This is a team that's been, you know, stomped on for 25 years at this stage. But you can't be that guy and then throwing three killer picks in the game also. So it works when he's working.
Right. And that's just how it works. Like if Joe Burrow acts like Joe Burrow and the Bengals win three games and he throws 40 picks, it's not going to be as fun and like gif-able.
It looks askance. So yeah.
I think Baker's problem was, I mean, at least for me, and I think you'll probably agree with this, but the GQ article, the offseason GQ article or the offseason Mina Kimes feature, both of those should be major red flags if your guy is involved in those. And if he's involved in both of them, then you need to run for the hills. And like, that was like Baker and Odell had like four of those combined last year. And it's like, are you working on football or are you worried about GQ and State Farm commercials? And when you're overexposed like that and underperform, it really like hammers home how bad of a season you have.
I also, you know, I'd add in the, was it the Progressive or whatever, the commercial?
Oh, yeah, Progressive. That's
right. I mean, and those were cute before week one. But then in week 13, those are airing nonstop, I like that. My whole thing with these, there's going to be 15 players they do that with this year too.
Yeah.
Who the ad campaign goes through the playoffs. Now the ad campaign should check itself around week 8 if the ship is totally on fire.
It should have a clause in it, whether like if your team is good, we'll keep paying you for these ads. Yeah.
It's just so embarrassing by late December to be watching, you know, ads of him sitting in his treating the Cleveland Stadium as his living room while with his wife turning the lights on and off. It was a little bit much, a lot too much for me.
Also, the smoke alarm got me literally I checked the smoke alarm in my house every time. It's infuriating. So defensively, we should cover both sides. Although I do think the Browns are another team that it's like everything hinges on Baker. If they go 8-8 and miss the playoffs, but Baker has an outstanding, you know, takes a huge step forward in Kevin Stefanski's offense, people will not sweat the record. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So I think it's just like they hinge on Baker. And if Baker can prove again that he should be the guy, they're fine. I mean, defensively, I think there's a lot to like here with this Browns team. I mean, they added Carl Joseph, Grant Delpit, in the draft as well. They have Andrew Sadejo there. Greedy Williams and Denzel Ward is a really nice combo that could develop a little bit more at cornerback. And then we'll see what they do. Maybe they signed Jadeveon Clowney. I don't know if they keep Olivier Vernon around, but I mean, Larry Ogunjobi, who's a monster out of Charlotte, who I love. And then Miles Garrett's like a defensive player of the year. This is a potentially really good defense.
Yeah, they've certainly got, I can't remember a Browns team that had sort of a host of blue chip guys on defense that you could really say, I wouldn't have a problem seeing three or four of these guys in the Pro Bowl. It stood out to me last year when Miles Garrett, you know, went out with the suspension. They gave up over 30 points in each of their last three games. I mean, the defense just totally collapsed. So I was really happy that they didn't just, you know, there seemed to be all this buzz. Well, you've got to move on from Olivier Vernon. Do you? I mean, I don't know why you can't have two or three or four promising pass rushers. To that side, I've had people tell me, you know, don't sign Jadeveon Clowney because it's too much in that locker room. Well, you know what? I mean, just let's try that and see if that's
why. Why is Clowney a locker room problem? What has Clowney ever done? I feel like people think of Clowney as a problem because he's people still assign the stigma of Clowney like not trying on every play from college. It's like he was at South Carolina and they wouldn't let him leave and get paid. So he's sort of checked out a little bit for his final year in like unpaid non-professional football. Like give a guy a break.
Yeah. I don't know him personally. Like the one time I was ever in his, you know, zone doing some interviews, he seemed very professional to me. I've never, yeah. I don't think there's a lot of stories out there of him being like a locker room cancer. It's the opposite. So I don't know, you know,
yeah, I'm with you. All right. So this is what we've been asking everybody in these team questions. What constitutes a successful season from the Cleveland Browns?
So you've got this extra playoff spot in the AFC. And I think it's the AFC. Tell me if I'm wrong here, but I look up and down both conferences, and every team outside of maybe one or two feels like a potential playoff team. I don't remember other seasons like that, but maybe
No. It feels like who is definitely, can you name an NFL team that is definitely not making the playoffs?
I mean, I guess like the
Jaguars.
Yeah, that would be the popular answer. But I mean, Gardner Minshew is a magician who Panthers, might just do it all.
Panthers Redskins, yeah. Giants. But like, that's it. There's like that's four it. Teams where it's like, I mean, like you can see every, I mean, are we just optimistic here in June, I guess, but like I can see all these teams going 8-8, even the Dolphins.
I totally could too. And so you know, for Cleveland, they were 6-10 a year ago, in a perfect storm of just absolute nonsense. So I would like to see 10-6. I think that whether they make the playoffs or not, 10-6 to me, would be a really, really, promising future note. Now, you know, things don't work out the way. So I think, you know, 9-7 and the seventh playoff spot, the AFC North could send three teams. And I wouldn't be that shocked if one of them weren't the Browns and one was the Bengals. I just don't think that's that crazy. And so a lot could go wrong, but I think Cleveland, if they're going to live up to their talent and they're well-coached, should be a 9-7 team.
I think well-coached, Baker Mayfield takes a step forward. I think if those two things happen, they are an 8-8-plus team. And so then you hope you just got to get a little bit of luck and get to 9-7, 10-6. I think that's about right. Like if they did go 8-8 and didn't make the playoffs, but like Stefanski knew what he was doing, he was getting praised and Baker looked awesome, I think people would be like, okay, like, you know, it was a weird season, weird off season. Right. What are you going to do? Chalk it up to that. Let's move on to next year. Baker's the guy. Stefanski looks smart and you just hope 2021 is better. All right, buddy. Thanks for chatting, Browns. We'll talk to you again on Monday. And of course, we have much more coming up on the All 32 series as we rip through the entire NFL. Talk to you guys later.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.